going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hey, it's me, Paige DeSorbo, and I'm so excited to share my new shoe collection at DSW, filled with my favorite styles and trends for spring. Because if you know me, you know I'm kind of obsessed with shoes. And by kind of obsessed, I mean head over heels. You're going to love these shoes. So snag super cute styles like cute flats, fun heels, and cool sneakers from the Paige DeSorbo collection right now at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Now, I have to open with the debate that is sweeping the nation right now. It has nothing to do with the NFL draft, even though we'll get into it. One silverback or 100 men? Who you got? Fight to the death.
Fight to the death. I say 100 men, and I was looking at the stats, right? I'm a big analytics guy. And the average gorilla is about 5.5 feet tall and weighs between 300 and 400 pounds. So in hindsight, we're talking about a D3 center here, D3 guard maybe. And no offense, right? But 100 men, man, I don't think people understand the ratio there. And all you need is one or two sacrifices, and the other 98 can get it done.
So you're talking, you're comparing a full-grown silverback gorilla to a D3 center, but he'd have to be like a weight room warrior, that D3 center.
Big weight room warrior, bad knees, all triceps, but a work hard, a grinder type of guy, man. I mean, I see the gorilla taking out 20 to 25 guys, but it's strength in numbers at this point,
that's
brother.
That's the thing. 100 of anything's tough to – it's tough to overcome. Mm-hmm. The way I'd put it, like, imagine if you had 100, if you're a man and you had 100 golden retrievers come after you. You're not winning that battle.
Yeah.
You're not winning that battle.
No, not at all. I don't think people understand, just like you said, the ratio, man. It's 100 to 1, right? Now, if we're talking a much bigger animal, you know, maybe a tiger or something unrealistic, then of course, yeah. But, I mean, it's a gorilla. I mean, they're 5.5 feet tall. I mean, I give that advantage to the humans there.
Yeah, the only thing I can't get past is a gorilla's skin is 2 to 4 times thicker than a human's skin. So how are you actually, with no weapons especially, how are you, the inflicting of damage is the issue I have with the men right now. I think I'd take 100 men because 100 men's just, that's a lot to overcome. But how do you actually inflict damage is the one question I can't overcome right now.
I mean, now you get into who am I going to war with, right?
If
you give me prime 2010 Brock Lesnar and you know, you got some other guys there, then of course.
John Jones with some spinning back kicks to the
John
face.
John Jones. Dude, I mean, you give me, I mean, look at these boxers they make now. I mean, Tyson Fury's, what, 6'8", 300 pounds, 290? So, well, I mean, one hit of his straight to the jaw, and I think that gorilla's going to be sleeping.
Okay. All right. We got 100 men. All right. Now let's go ahead and get into the NFL draft.
Let's do it.
I want to open with you because, well, first of all, what's your situation this offseason when it comes to contracts and where you're going to be playing next year, free agency, all that?
Yeah. So, you know, I'm very thankful. I just finished up the last 2 years, my fifth year with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Right now I'm a free agent. And so a lot of, like, the older free agents, the veteran free agents in the NFL, if you're not a part of the first wave, you kind of have to wait for the draft to trickle down, a little OTAs to go by, and then teams kind of figure out what their needs are. And then hopefully here soon, my agent, he's heard from a few teams about needs for defensive tackles. So hopefully we'll get something here soon and let the dominoes fall where they fall.
Now, I want to get into this conversation around the NFL draft because it's annoying to me because I see the Lions and what they've done in the draft. A few years ago, if they would have never drafted a running back as high as they did, an off-ball linebacker as high as they did, a free safety, We're talking about Jahmyr Gibbs, Jack Campbell, and Brian Branch. They would not be in the situation they're in right now with one of the best rosters in the National Football League. But around the NFL draft, we get a lot of conversations about positional value, right? And you play a position in the National Football League that doesn't the NFL scouts and front offices, they don't place a bunch of value necessarily in a run-stuffing D-tackle. But what do you make about the conversation, especially around the draft with positional value? I'll give you an example. Tyler Booker taken at number 12. Really good guard, really good upside, guy that I think can start day one in the National Football League, but he's picked at number 12, and you see a lot of Cowboys fans frustrated with that pick. They wanted a more valued position. What do you make of that entire conversation?
You know, I think it's all about where your superstars are in the NFL, right? And I look at the Cowboys. I look at a guy like Zach Martin, a first ballot Hall of Famer, going out this year. And I mean, I think he had more Pro Bowls and holding calls. I think that was a stat.
Right. Yeah.
And so, you know, your first initial thought going into the offseason, and I'm speaking on the Cowboys' behalf here, but everybody thinks, oh, I got to go get weapons for Dak. Rightfully so. But if Dak isn't upright, you know, for 12, 13 years, Zach Martin kept that, kept whoever was behind him upright, you're not going to get that both of those weapons. And I think for me, when I look at it, in order for these premier positions to succeed, whether it's quarterback, receiver, these DBs, you know, Travis Hunter types, you need the trenches, man. You need guys like Tyler Booker. You need guys like Mason Graham in order to make things work in the back end of every offense and defense. And so when people talk about, oh, I wish we had more of a premier position, things work together for the greater good of the offense and the defense and the scheme. And I think a guy like Tyler Booker is going to come in and surprise a lot of people, because I know the happiest person in the world right now is probably Dak Prescott, 100%. And that's all that matters.
Yeah, and here's the thing. When it comes to the NFL draft, too often those value positions of quarterback, wide receiver, DB, what have you, people miss on those positions more than they hit historically, especially since the 2000s began. My opinion has always been, if there is somebody, whatever position they play outside of kicker and punter, for, you know, we'll leave those out. Mm-hmm. But if there is a position you can fill with a guy who you feel like is a no doubt 10-year, decade potential second contract guy, I feel like you should do that with whatever pick, quite frankly. I'm not advocating for picking a guard or a off-ball linebacker number one overall. But after you get out of those top five picks, I don't know if that positional value thing should matter as much as how good is the guy? How much upside does this guy have once we get outside of those picks?
I agree. And for me, I'm not a general manager. That's way out of my pay grade. But if I ever ran a team one day and somebody asked me, what is a premier pick to you? You know, is it a quarterback? Is it a running back? Is it an O-line? Et cetera. I'd counter by saying, I value cornerstone pieces over premier picks.
Right.
Right? Give me 2 to 3 cornerstone guys in a span of 3 years in the draft versus 4 to 6, 7 premier pieces, because more than often, you can build off of cornerstone pieces. You can build off of a Zach Martin, right? You can build off of a Travis Frederick, a Tyron Smith, the trenches Dallas built over the years. Premier pieces come along every year, man. You see the name of the game at the college level, man. These skill guys just pop out, man. They're producing them more and more, but when you talk about cornerstone pieces versus premier pieces, I take cornerstone guys 24 hours of the day, 365 days a year, man.
Yeah. Now, there was a premier pick at the top of the draft. We'll get to the other quarterback that fell a little bit later in this conversation. But Cam Ward was number one overall to the Titans. We're here in the state of Tennessee. We have some Titans fans in the listening audience. Can Cam Ward change the conversation around the Titans? And with that, if you do think he can, how quickly do you think that can happen for the Tennessee Titans?
You know, it's hard because as the number one overall pick, everybody expects immediate success, right? And you look at number one overall picks throughout the years, more than often, Gabe, number one overall picks either take a little longer to develop or they don't pan out as what people make them out to be. And that's not an issue on the number one overall pick itself. It's the expectations that come with being a number one overall pick. In Cam Ward's situation, I think the one thing that pops out to me is his arm strength, right? I don't know which play or what game it was this year, but I remember him rolling out of the pocket and lasering it to the back end of the end zone.
That Florida game. That Florida game off the top of the year.
The Florida game, right. Yeah. And so I remember that was kind of one of my first really like, oh, man, like, who is this guy, right? And then, oh, Cam Ward, okay, let me start watching him. And then, man, like, his mobility. And I watched him, like, just his improvisation throughout the game. Like, he made things happen when they weren't there on a Miami team. That, honestly, man, if you gave him some of the premier, you know, speed and weapons that some of these Big Ten schools, like the Egbuka, the Jeremiah Smith, these kind of receivers, I think people would be, like, giving Cam Ward a little bit more respect than he deserves. But as far as where he is in Tennessee, I think he's in a great place. I think with that staff there, I think they're going to let him get his feet wet, get into it, get a lot of training camp reps. They're not going to put a lot on his plate early, man. That's one of the things you don't want to do, especially as an early round pick, because like I said earlier, man, the expectations are already high. You know, he's the first overall pick. They're expecting him to be a franchise changer, a guy that's going to set them up like as a cornerstone piece for decades to come. And so I'm a fan of him. I think he's going to do really well. I like the tools. I like his ceiling, man. If I could compare him, I feel like he gives me a little bit of like Patrick Mahomes-esque. I'm not now.
Obviously, it's not one to one. I know where you're going with that.
It's not one to one. You know what I mean? But I think he gives me a lot of Patrick Mahomes-esque in the pocket and a little bit of like that Trevor Lawrence type of like pocket general, very calm in the pocket, good arm. Type of deal. So I'm excited to see, you know, how he does in third and Tennessee this year.
Well, in the end of the day, like the Patrick Mahomes things comes from different arm angles, getting out of the pocket, creating off platform, still having the arm strength to go make those throws like that one you're talking about in that Florida game where he's rolling out of the pocket, finds his guy at the back of the end zone on the money. It was a dot from about 35 yards away. So, like, I get part of that. Obviously, we don't like those comparisons because that creates even more expectation on the kid's back before he even takes a snap. Now, the number two pick. Let's get to this. One of the Colorado guys was Travis Hunter. Jags move up to go get him. You've played NFL snaps on the defensive side of the ball. You know what it entails. You know how hard it is. You know how your conditioning has to be high. I know that there's this thought that he can play both sides of the ball, but if you were a general manager, how do you view using him, utilizing him on both sides of the ball? Because I don't think you make that pick at number two unless you have that idea in your mind.
Yeah. You know, I watched this sit down with the GM and front office people as soon as they drafted him. And you know, the GM said, man, we believe in you for these reasons to be different. We want you to be different. You know, be the person you want to be, and that's playing receiver and DB. In my opinion, I think in how I'd handle Travis is I ask him first, Travis, in your opinion, what are you comfortable playing, right? Because he probably is going to be like, I'm comfortable playing either or. But I feel as a rookie, there needs to be like a 70-30 distribution between his snap percentage, whether it's 70% offense, 30% defense, or 70% defense, 30% offense. And I'd even go 80-20. But I think when you go 50-50, being the number two overall pick, people are going to expect the flashy plays, the instant impact, all that kind of things early. And like I said, it's hard for a guy to adjust to the league. I mean, on one side of the ball. I mean, you see guys throughout the years, Gabe, that come in as a top five, top ten draft pick on one side of the ball, and it takes them 4 or 5 years to thrive. Now, I'm hoping Travis does it because, number one, it makes history. Number two, it sets an expectation. Now it sets the bar higher for people to show them and future stars in the NFL that, hey, it can be done. But in my opinion, the physicality and the speed, no offense to Colorado, right? But you're not playing Colorado State. You're not playing North Dakota State, right? There's one week where you're going to have to go cover Nico Collins, and then you turn around on offense and you got Derek Stingley covering you, right? So, like, these are things where I think they're going to have to figure it out, and I think you distribute the snaps evenly, or not evenly, but 80-20, 70-30. And I think by doing that, you get his feet wet, you get him more comfortable. Get him to make a little bit of plays on both sides of the ball. Get his confidence up. Get him to understand the speed of the game. And then by year two and three, maybe we'll see that 50-50 snap distribution of Travis Hunter, and hopefully he exceeds expectations of everybody that's kind of doubted this both ways, two-way thing kind of ball going into the league.
And, Braden, it's kind of funny. Everybody talks about the physical nature of playing both sides of the ball, injuries, and how hard it's going to be on the body. on the mind, mm-hmm. I feel like that's probably the bigger hurdle, no? Like, just to be able to have your game plan and understand the game plan on the defensive side of the ball, then to be able to run the full route tree on the offensive side of the ball, know where you're supposed to be, know your conversions with your route running. Like, that, to me, is almost the bigger hurdle. Having played the game at a high level, do you feel like that may be the bigger hurdle?
100%. I agree with you. I think example A is just the play calling in the NFL, right? In college, you know, I'm pretty sure, Gabe, you're used to one-word play calls, right?
Oh,
one word kind of tells everybody, here's the protection, here's the route tree,
especially
here's the
with
run
all the
action.
Tempo that's run at that level. All the tempo.
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
A one-word play, go run inside zone right now.
100%. And it tells everybody on offense what they're doing. In the NFL, those play calls, you know, I'm just joking here, but, you know, John Gruden, Spider, Y2, Banana,
right.
X, Hitch, F, whatever, you know, now there's a whole lengthy play call sheet, whereas now he's got to learn maybe 70 to 80 of those in a full game plan and then go on the defensive side and you got about 20 to 30 more plays. So, I mean, you got 100 play calls in just a single week. Mentally, that's going to take a lot on your plate. And you know as much as I do, Gabe, when you play football, if there's a lot on your plate mentally, you cannot execute the game at how you want to physically.
Yeah.
And you know that.
Paralysis by analysis. It's a thing. It happens.
Mm-hmm.
When you're thinking too
100%.
Much, when there's too many bodies moving around, you lose exactly what your plan was going into the play. A lot of things happen in a split second,
100%.
And it's hard to take in all that information with 1 week of preparation on both sides of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his teammate, Shedeur Sanders, fell to the fifth round. I mean,
yeah.
I don't need you to elaborate too much, right? You're still trying to get a job this offseason. And you don't want to – you're not going to bad talk anybody, but what did you make of that?
No,
that was tough to watch over the weekend.
It was. You know, I think – and I'll just kind of keep it short and keep it watered down, but from my opinion, right, whenever I, you know, evaluate talent or whenever I, you know, look at college players, I always look at – what they do on the field. I'm not the type of guy where this goes on off the field. Like that's not for me to worry about. If you can play football, you can play football and the NFL will find you. I think in Shedeur's case, right, I think when it came down to the quarterback class this year, the strength of the quarterback class, it wasn't as strong just as last year's class. I mean, we saw what, 5-0
sure.
in the first round last year. And when you look at quarterbacks this year, right, if you're drafting a guy in the first round, Gabe, you're either thinking immediate starter from day one or eventually he's going to start by week 5 or week 6 to save my job, you know?
Yeah.
And I look at the quarterback class this year. Two off the top of my head, maybe three kind of give you day one starter vibes. It's Cam Ward and, in my opinion, Jackson Dart. Outside of those two, if they're not first-round guys, then why would you expect it make a pick expendable in the second, third, or even fourth round, right? Now, in the Brown situation, they took DG in the third.
Yes.
I think that's more of a, we don't know if Deshaun's going to be healthy to start the year this year, so let's get a little insurance policy. And then you usually take four quarterbacks into training camp, and so with that fifth-round pick, they took Shedeur. But, you know, in a general sense, I think there was a lot of discourse between the internet mocks, Twitter takes and actual NFL execs on what they graded out these players. Because we see players every year, Gabe, talented players, award winners, drop into the fifth, sixth, and even go undrafted. But I think because of the internet stir, the attention behind Colorado this year, a lot of people felt offended. But I don't think it was really offense to what these NFL execs thought. I just think they had a lower grade than what everybody else expected Shedeur to go off the board this year.
Yeah, and I think everybody did. And I think there was a lot of groupthink before the draft, and obviously Shedeur and his dad, they create a lot of talk. So with that talk,
mm-hmm.
you talk everybody into, okay, he's going to be a first-round pick, when maybe the evaluation on most people's boards mm-hmm. was not quite that. And I think this weekend definitely showed us that. Now, final thing, your former team, the Steelers, they were actually one of the favorites going into the draft, according to like sports books and everything, to take Shedeur mm-hmm. Sanders. At the quarterback position, though, they're in an interesting spot. I know you put out a tweet about Mason Rudolph and what that could look like. And,
yep.
You know, especially with George Pickens and DK Metcalf now on the outside. We know at Oklahoma State with James Washington, he was a really good deep ball thrower, although he has not been like a full-time starter in the National Football League really his entire career. What do you make of the Steelers and their quarterback position right now? Because it's a relatively unproven and from the outside looking in, empty room.
I mean, first off, I feel a little disrespected. You didn't give my guy Calvin Austin enough respect.
Oh, of course. Oh, now. Calvin, yes, deep threat as well. Come on, right? Yeah, I'm dead wrong. I actually saw him at the spring game this past weekend when I was over there with my son and my wife.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.TV. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.